Welcome to the CCTA wake-up call, and glad you could join us. My name is Bob Griswold.
I'm Mary Griswold.
I'm Kim Fink.
I'm Glenn Skinner.
And I'm Jerry Schill.
Tonight we're going to talk about North Carolina's fishing industry, which I know nothing about. So I'm going to ask some really basic questions, and Glenn is going to explain how everything works. The North Carolina Fisheries Associates sent out an update on the 21st of August. And in it, they talked about pelagic longline fishing. Would you please tell me what that is?
The pelagic longline fishery, I don't know if any of you are familiar with like the Perfect Storm movie.
Yes.
Where they go out and they run the lines, the hooks, and then go back and fish them, reel them in, and they're targeting swordfish, tuna, other types of fish. But that's what the pelagic longline fishery
so,
is.
So it's multiple fish. You're bringing in multiple fish on the same line as you bring it in.
Yeah. These lines are really long. They run them out with multiple hooks, just like you saw in the movie where they're setting them. And then they go back and fish. I don't know the exact duration. I've never been engaged in the fishery, but we have a lot of fishermen in North Carolina who are engaged in it.
And what are they proposing to do that's going to change the regulations with this?
That's really in depth. There's a lot of stuff they're planning on changing. One of the big things is, closed areas, closing some areas because of interactions with other species, billfish that may be overfish, that kind of thing. Putting observers on boats, making the fishermen pay for those observers to go out there. The important thing to remember, this fishery is already highly regulated. When they go out, they have tracking systems on their boats. They know where they're at all the time, where they're fishing. They have cameras on their boats. Anytime that gear turns on that boat, the camera turns on. And it is on the station where that gear comes across the side of the boat. They see everything they catch. They are not allowed to turn it off. If they deactivate that, they could get in trouble. So it's a highly regulated fishery. What they're proposing right now, could it really impact the fishermen? And I really wish we had Thomas Newman here. We have so many fisheries in North Carolina, federally managed fisheries, state managed fisheries. Right now I have Thomas Newman, who wrote the update that you referred to, staying on top of this issue because I'm working on state managed issues. And they're just as impactful, just different fishermen and different fisheries.
So the actual issues could themselves conflict with each other. And the fisherman has no idea which way to go. I mean, it sounds silly, but what do you do when you've got the conflict? You know, I'm going back to the fisheries meeting that was held down in Emerald Isle a couple of years ago. And one of the real pointed questions, and I think it was Bob Steinberg that asked that question, was what objective information do you have that's causing this change in the regulations? I mean, have they actually observed an actual change in the various species or whatever? Do they have any of that stuff, or are they just flying blind?
It's based on data. Some fisheries have stronger data. Some have weaker data. Just because you have weak data or very little data does not prevent them from managing a fishery and taking management action. Although, as I grew up, when there's a high degree of uncertainty, you should slow down and take your time and look at something a little closer. It seems to be just opposite in the fisheries management world. The higher degree of uncertainty, the more precautionary and draconian the approach usually is, which is frustrating to fishermen. And then when you have multi-use fisheries where commercial fishermen and recreational fishermen target the same species, the data is much stronger on the commercial side. The regulations are much harsher. The observation, like I said, of cameras or observers on your boat, that kind of stuff that doesn't occur on the recreational fishery. So you feel like you get penalized for doing your part, collecting the data, and others get off scot-free for not being observed, not having all the penalties that you have placed upon you, and it gets really frustrating for the industry.
A little bit of an ignorant question about fish. They're in the Atlantic Ocean, and they don't know where the state boundaries are, or how far the federal regulations go, or what international waters are, or state waters are. So if North Carolina makes all of these regulations, it's not going to change the number of fish that are in North Carolina waters. It just means that our fishermen in North Carolina don't have a job.
Yeah, and it depends on which species. When you're talking about the pelagic longline fishery, it only occurs in federal waters, so those are federal regulations. These other fisheries, some spot, croaker, weak fish, those species migrate all up and down the coast, and they're managed by, like, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. Then you have other species that supposedly don't migrate all up and down the coast, and they're managed by the North Carolina Marine Fisheries Commission.
Well, what about Canada? Canada's still on the East Coast. The fish don't know what the Canadian border is.
Exactly. And fish don't recognize imaginary lines. You draw a line in the water, you can catch something on this side of the line, can't catch it on the other side of the line. It creates a lot of headaches, obviously. And then people talk about fisheries in North Carolina impacting a coastwide stock. It's almost impossible for a fishery in one state to impact a coastwide stock, or for a management measure adopted in one state to positively affect the entire stock if the other states don't follow suit. So it's far more complicated than most people realize. It's not just, hey, if you do this, there'll be more fish. It doesn't work that way.
When they close down an area and restrict an area, do they have any way of measuring whether that actually changed the population of that area?
In general, they do not have the funds, the resources to go and monitor an area once it's closed. So for a lot of fisheries, when they close an area, the answer would be no. They just don't monitor it well enough to know if it had any positive impact or not.
So they have no clue.
I'm going to be a little harsher and say they have no desire to monitor afterwards. I'm going to bring up the other issue that we see up north, and that is the windmills versus the whales. As they're doing the pile driving to put in the windmills, they're disorienting the whale population. The sonar is getting all whacked up, and the number of whales that are coming ashore dead. And yet nobody seems to care, and nobody seems to have done their homework when issuing the permits for those windmills.
This is a politically driven agenda. There's just no doubt about it. And the facts or the science means little to nothing to those that are pushing it.
It's the checkbooks.
Pardon?
The checkbooks.
Yes. Yep. So they're looking at a lot of money behind this, big time, and all the facts when it comes to the economics of green energy just aren't there unless it's highly subsidized. And like I said, it's a perfect example of throwing facts to the wind, no pun intended, and the fishermen here are the ones that are the victims.
And I've seen it in trade, also with our foreign trade deals, that if they regulate what we can do here, we're still importing from someplace else. Instead of getting North Carolina shrimp, you're getting Vietnam shrimp,
which you can't really trust. Yeah. The thing about the windmills, too, if the whales that were washing up on those shores were caused by oil spills, there would be outrage.
I'm sure there would be. Yeah.
But it's windmills, and nobody's paying attention. And in terms of what you just said about the money, during the Obama administration, during the time that the Democrats had the White House and Congress, there was a bill put forth for cap-and-trade legislation, which would have meant exchanging carbon credits. And in Chicago, a carbon credit exchange was opened up, heavily invested in by Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Valerie Jarrett, and a number of other people. They lost their shirts when carbon credit legislation didn't go through. It couldn't have happened to a nicer bunch of people. But they were all set to profit off the cap and trade legislation going through. And unfortunately, we're seeing similar things with the green energy movement.
Now, Glenn, in this situation, though, if I'm hearing correctly, the real victim, again, is the small crew fisherman that first off has to have that extra observer on board and pay for that observer, follow these extra regulations, move to a different fishing ground, do whatever else. Is there any?
It's questionable whether it's even justified, but you're right. It's the burden if the government has to observe a fishery, why would you place the burden on the fishermen? You know, it's enough of a burden to be on a small vessel and have somebody you absolutely don't know who is recording everything you do. Just imagine in your office if somebody sat there over your shoulder and watched everything you did and wrote down every time you made a mistake.
And taking up space.
Taking up space.
Or if you had an OSHA person at International Paper every day, or at Moen or at Bosch.
Yeah. It's also a liability issue when you have somebody on your vessel, especially the smaller vessels. This is dangerous work. You know, and if something happens, are you liable for their injury, or is the government liable? And a lot of there's gray area around that. You know, you're opening yourself up to a civil suit if they get injured on your boat, because they really shouldn't be on your boat. I mean, if you don't know what you're doing. So,
I think it's important to note in these discussions, generally speaking, that when you're talking about state regulated fisheries, you're talking from the shore to 3 miles out, and the rivers and the tributaries along with that. But federal regulations are from 3 to 200 miles. The international line is 200 miles.
Wow.
Now, that was due to the Magnuson Act being passed in 1976. And the primary purpose of that law was to push the foreign vessels off our shores. Even today we hear, oh, I think the Russians are fishing off a Nag's Head. Well, I don't think so. But there are those.
But that's well out to Georgia's Bank and all. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. And thank you for staying with us. And we ask you to get involved in this topic.
Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out RightWingGranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to RightWingGranny.com.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military. Just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back, and thank you for hearing from our sponsors and supporters. And Mary?
Glenn, would you please tell us a little bit about the North Carolina Fisheries Association, what they do, whose members, and how they work?
The Fisheries Association is a trade organization. We represent mostly commercial fishing industry in the state, some charter for hire members, have some recreational members too, and we work through the management process or lobbying in Raleigh or even in D.C. Jerry spent quite a bit of time in D.C. in the past just trying to represent the industry and make sure they're treated fairly and looked out for. So.
Now, a couple of years ago, we went to a hearing on Emerald Isle about some regulations. Who put on the hearing?
I believe that would be the North Carolina Marine Fisheries Commission meeting that you were referring to when they were trying to regulate the shrimp industry here in the state.
Okay. And in a situation like that, would you encourage your members to go to that hearing? And
We generally do, and depending on the issue, we're there to represent our members. If we need the members to get off the water and lose a day's work to go to a meeting, we'll try to get them there, but we generally try to let the fishermen work. Fishing is, you don't have paid vacations. If you don't fish that day, or if you do fish that day and you don't catch anything, you don't get paid anything. And you had your fuel cost or bait or whatever else. So we try not to drag the fishermen off the water unless it's absolutely necessary. And we hope to represent them there and speak on their behalf. So.
By the way, I want to bring in one quick thing. Folks, we are a 501c3 organization, and by the way, the Fisheries Association is one of our supporters and sponsors. I just want to make sure everybody's aware of that, but they've been very faithful in supporting us.
Can you tell me a little bit about who your members are?
It's primarily commercial fishermen. North Carolina's commercial fishing industry is really small. Independent business people. I'm a fisherman, been a fisherman all my life. And even the larger vessels that we have in our fleet, and we have folks that have 80, 90, 100-foot boats that work both in Pamlico Sound and then up and down the coast, engaged in different fisheries. They're family-owned. Family owns four or five, or even some families have 8 or 10 boats that have been in it for multiple generations, but it's still family. It's not this corporate entity that some people try to make it. Now, the boats are incorporated, so it's a corporation, but you do that for a liability issue. If you own two boats and something happens on one boat, you want that to be a separate corporation so somebody doesn't take everything you have if they sue you. But saying it's a corporation doesn't mean it's not a small family-owned business. So
what's the difference between a commercial fisherman and Joe Public going and shrimping and selling them out of an ice box on the side of the road?
Commercial fishermen are licensed commercial fishermen. We get a license that allows us to commercial fish. We sell, but we're only allowed to sell to licensed dealers in the state unless we get a dealer's license, and then we're allowed to fill out our own trip tickets and sell our own stuff. But a commercial fisherman has reporting requirements. Everything we sell has to be recorded on a trip ticket. We're somebody who's a recreational fisherman, don't have those kind of reporting requirements. And if they're selling seafood to somebody, they're selling it illegally if they don't have a commercial or dealer's license.
So Joe Public selling on the side of the road is not regulated by how much shrimp he can get or sell. There's nobody checking up on him.
Now, if he's selling on the side of the road and has a dealer's license or bought from a licensed dealer, he's selling legally.
How would you know?
Well, you have to ask. Most people who are set up visible advertising on the side of the road may not be a commercial fisherman, but they buy from a licensed dealer and then resell. Your buddy who's your neighbor who goes out on Sunday night and says, hey, do you want 50 pounds? Probably isn't a licensed dealer. Or a commercial fisherman.
My mom and dad stayed down on the Intercoastal Waterway at an RV park, and there is a dock in front of the RV park, and every now and again a trawler will just dock there and sell right off the boat.
Yep.
And I was just wondering if that was...
And more than likely that it's a legitimate business that has the proper licensing to do that.
Yep.
Most fishermen don't want to mess with that. It's a pain in the butt, but some do because yep. It eliminates part of that chain and allows them to make a little bit extra money. I know some folks in Pamlico County that are legitimate commercial fishermen, and you'll see them on Facebook saying, I'll be coming in tomorrow or my husband will be coming in tomorrow. We're going to be at Les' location, and if you want some 21-25 heads off, and there are so many dollars a pound, you know.
What's 21-25?
That's how many shrimp are in a pound, 21 to 25 per pound. And that's something that's become more prevalent, especially this year. Right now, most people aren't aware there is not a market for shrimp. The shrimp fishery, because the imports have flooded that market, cold storage is full in this country, and this isn't a North Carolina problem. This is a coastwide problem. The Gulf, the boats that are usually engaged in this fishery are not. I was with our chairman, Brent Fulcher, today. Not one of his boats is shrimping in Pamlico Sound this year, and normally would go every year. But when he gets a few shrimp, just trying to find a home for them, get them sold, is an issue. And when he does, the prices are so low, with fuel costs being so high, it's not profitable.
So it's not a lack of stock out there. I mean, you have the stock that could be fished. Yes. You just don't have a market
shrimp
for
it. Shrimp are what we call an annual crop, and there's not a stock issue with shrimp. The abundance on a yearly basis is based more on environmental conditions than anything else. You can have real low stock one year and a massive stock the next year, just depending on how much rain, the salinity, the water temperature, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, we never have an issue with shrimp abundance, per se, as far as it being overfished. It's just whether you have a market and the imports.
The trade deals that they made that affect us, because we have agreed that we're going to import X hundred thousands of pounds of shrimp. Yep.
And unfortunately, the imports, I don't believe, are as regulated in terms of sanitary conditions as what is caught locally. I mean, I would feel much more comfortable eating something that I knew was caught locally than something that came from a country that might not have the same kind of sanitary conditions that America has.
Or slave labor.
Yeah. Well, that too.
Most of the shrimp that's imported is pond raised, and if we had ever witnessed how they're raised, you probably wouldn't want to buy them. So the best thing to do is when you go into a market, especially Walmart, Sam's Club, place at Costco, be looking at the source. Be looking at where it's coming from, and demand domestic shrimp. Doesn't have to be from North Carolina. It's fresher if it's from North Carolina. But Gulf shrimp is good, but just as long as it's domestic product. And that's what helps. People say, what can we do to help fishermen? Insist on buying domestic shrimp. If you go to a restaurant, ask questions. Mm-hmm. Your crab cakes, where's the crab meat come from?
They can't tell you most of the time.
Yeah, they can. The waiter or waitress usually can't. But that's an interesting exercise, and why my children don't like to go out and eat with me.
But, you know, you look at the industry. I mean, let's go back just a couple of years, the wonderful days of COVID, okay, where other industries had shut down and the government was doing something to pay all of these people that were out of work. The fishing industry was not treated the same way, I don't think. Mm. No, those family boats still needed to go out, and the folks, they couldn't stand 6 feet apart, and folks, they couldn't wear masks, and folks, they just...
We're considered essential workers in food production, and to be honest, the market, when you couldn't get pork, and you couldn't get beef, and you couldn't get chicken, you could get seafood, and when COVID initially hit, our industry virtually shut down because the restaurants shut down, and not long after, our industry, as far as the retail side of it, boom, we had to shift how we sold our stuff, but people were buying it because they couldn't get other meats. So we actually filled a big gap, and a lot of fishermen benefited for a short period of time. But unfortunately, things have gone back to normal. The imports are coming in, and our markets have gone away again.
And now it's under threat again.
And it's not just shrimp. Crab meat is in terrible shape. It's hard to sell crab meat. I like crab meat better than I do lobster. But, you know, it's... When I started with NCFA a few years back, there were about 44 licensed crab processing plants in the state. I don't know if there's five today.
Wow. Now, what are the most common fish caught off the North Carolina coast?
Phew, that's a tough one. Southern flounder was our primary inshore finfish fishery. It's not anymore because they've just virtually destroyed that fishery through management. they're getting ready to manage the striped mullet. If you live here around New Bern, I'm sure you see them jumping all the time. That's one of our biggest fisheries. It won't be when they get done with it here in another year or so. We have so many different species here, not in the abundance that you see to the north or to the south because of our location, but as far as the diversity, we have more diversity than just about any state in the U.S.
You know, something, I'm going back to an old story that we had up in Massachusetts who does the census? Whether is it NOAA?
NOAA.
Yeah, does the census. And they were doing a census on yellowtail flounder, and they shipped they did their fishing the wrong time of the day, the wrong size net, the wrong speed, and everything about it was wrong. And they used that as their, quote, accurate census, which shut down the industry.
Yeah, and that unfortunately happens a lot. You can't get better data from the people who fish for a living. We should all work with those scientists and collect that data, and that way we're sure we're getting accurate data.
Well, if the whole world doesn't follow the same kind of regulations, it's just going to be a shortage like on our coast versus the other side of the Atlantic.
Yeah.
It's true.
It's not going to save the flounder or the yellowfin.
No, it's not. No. We're in a competitive market, but we're going to hamstring ourselves when we're in that market.
And again, consumer beware in terms of what you're eating if it comes from another country, because you don't know what the sanitary conditions are. You don't know what you could find yourself getting sick eating something that you bought in a perfectly reputable grocery store.
They inject the shrimp with a jelly-like thing to make them way more.
Yeah, the
slimy.
We don't do that.
Now I'm going to break in and say, we've got to go to a break, folks. Let's listen to our sponsors again.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swanspur, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Hi, welcome back from the break. Again, I'm Bob Griswold, and I'm going to turn it over to Mary.
There was a recent lawsuit about shrimp fishing. Am I correct? Okay, do you guys want to talk about that a minute?
You want to start, Jerry?
I'll start. He can get to the detail stuff. But there was a group called the, what was it called?
The Coastal Fisheries
Coastal Fisheries Reform Group. It's CFRG. It's simple. They sued not the shrimp industry in general, but specific shrimp businesses. Those businesses were located in Dare, Hyde, Pamlico, and Carteret counties. And they were the bigger operations. And they sued them under the Clean Water Act, alleging that their bycatch, in other words, when they throw their bycatch overboard, that could be some undersized fish or, you know, things that they don't want, that's a violation of the Clean Water Act. That's the oversimplification. The shrimpers, of course, were the defendants. And I should note that the North Carolina Fisheries Association was not named in that lawsuit. It was against particular entities that shrimp in the Pamlico Sound. And originally, it went before a district court judge and ruled in the shrimpers' favor. But the CFRG appealed it. And it was in the appeals process for a long time. And you wondered why. Why it's taken so long. But it was a unanimous decision by a three judges on that panel in favor of the shrimpers, a unanimous decision. What was interesting is when you read their findings, because they acknowledged how big of a deal that would have been if the plaintiffs would have won. Because usually when you have a regulatory agency involved, in this case, the Clean Water Act is enforced by the Environmental Protection Agency. They didn't sue. The EPA wasn't trying to do anything. CFRG was trying to force them to get involved, which is really weird. And the judges saw that in the opinion, 23-page opinion, is very, very interesting. And it was a win not just for commercial and recreational fishermen, but anybody that throws bycatch overboard.
If you're out fishing and you're just a regular fisher person, you're not necessarily a commercial fisherman, and you catch a fish that's too small, you have to throw it overboard. Am I correct?
You are correct, and the same goes for commercial fishermen. And what the Coastal Fisheries Reform Group, and I usually don't mention names, but I'm going to because a lot of you are going to recognize Mr. Joe Albee from the Carolina Outdoor Journal, a TV show that's been on for quite some time. He's head of the group. He filed the lawsuit, and you can go watch his TV show and watch him throw back fish or bait hooks and throw that baited hook into the water. And under their interpretation of the Clean Water Act, he would have been in violation of the Clean Water Act also. And the judges saw that because the Clean Water Act doesn't deal with the size of the discharge of a pollutant. If it's a discharge of a pollutant, under their definition, it requires a permit and monitoring and other stuff. So their thought process was, hey, they could just dismiss the fact that millions of anglers are doing this and just hold the commercial sector accountable for doing the same thing. And the judge saw through that, and he mentioned in the ruling that, you know, if his daughter threw back a fish, with the EPA come and arrest her and take her allowance. And he said, although they told me the EPA wouldn't do that, that was of little comfort to me. He kind of comically noted that
He brought it down to reality.
Yes. If we gave them what they asked for, it would be absurd.
So. Well, the logical question to me is, if they didn't throw it back in the water, what in the world were they supposed to do with it?
What they were pushing for, they've been pushing for years to get shrimp trawling out of our sounds. This was throwing something at the wall to see if it stuck. Joe Albee and this same group have been for years. They've been behind several petitions. They've been pushed in the fishery management plans. Everything they can do to get shrimp in out of North Carolina's internal waters. It didn't work through the management process. The data wasn't in their favor, so they decided they would try the Clean Water Act.
That was what the hearing was about a couple of years ago on Emerald Isle. That was in regard to swimming or shrimping.
Yep. So in addition to the being regulated for how much you can harvest, they also are bankrupting these individuals with legal fees.
Well, that's a very good point, because here's a case where the shrimpers won. Hundreds of thousands of dollars spent on legal fees.
Yep.
So did they win?
That was my question. Not just they lost the opportunity cost of that money, but they also lost the fishing time that they could have been fishing with fighting it. And then if they're making money, they're paying the lawyer. And we all know that in legal cases, the only people that win are the attorneys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in this case, they didn't sue a federal agency. They didn't sue a state agency. They went out on the water and they followed an individual shrimp trawler. And they videotaped that shrimp trawler discharging bycatch, and then they filed a suit against the owner of that boat or the corporation. As I mentioned earlier, these boats are incorporated and cost them money, and they were acting legally. They are legally allowed the shrimp in our sounds, and until they're not, they are. That's just the way it is. But they...
Could the boat owner at this point go back and sue for those legal fees, for damages, civil litigation?
I don't believe that they're going to. There was some discussion about it, and they only had a two-week window after the ruling to do it. And at this point, I don't believe they're going to, which is disappointing to me, because there should be some penalty when you go after an individual citizen who is doing something that is allowed by law, and you file some
frivolous lawsuit.
Lawsuit against them.
Silly as it sounds, I mean, so if Joe goes out and he chums before
violation
he goes fishing,
the Clean Water Act
but he didn't violate it.
But you wonder. This is where the media comes in. Did the media call them and say, "Now wait a minute, Joe? If shrimpers are in violation of the Clean Water Act, how about you? I mean, did the media do that?"
Not to my knowledge.
No, I'm going to ask an obvious question. Okay, again, this case was won in front of three judges. How much publicity has the winning of that case gotten?
Not near as much as the filing of the case got, at least locally. Now, we have had a few reporters. We sent out a press release, but the local stations here, Carteret, Craven County, up and down the coast, that made a big deal out of this lawsuit being filed, have not reached out to us, and to my knowledge, have not done a story letting folks know about this rule.
Other than the Carteret News Times, Lockwood Phillips was all over it. Glenn was on his program, so... You know,
but Capital Tonight did an episode, but really not the coverage that it deserves. This ruling is being talked about by folks all over the country. How big of a deal this ruling was, this lawsuit could have been, but our local news media doesn't seem too excited.
Now I'm going to add an extra word to what you said. This nuisance lawsuit.
Yeah.
Well, we sent out a press release. It was a pretty good press release, and I made sure. So News and Observer, same thing. I sent it to a reporter. His name was Adam Wagner. He does environmental reporting, and haven't heard diddly squat from him. And I followed him up. What about that press release? Silence. So, you know, very, very subjective. News reporters are supposed to be objective. They're not. They're just not.
Yep. And it's been disappointing on our end to see that, because like I say, this story was spread far and wide. You can go anywhere you want on social media and see Joe Albee at a local tackle shop or anywhere talking about the lawsuit and why they filed it, but you can't find the ruling hardly anywhere.
Yeah.
Why do you think that the recreation or the trophy fish people want to destroy the commercial people? Isn't there enough for everybody?
There should be enough for anybody, but let's face it, any wild resource is a limited resource. And if you want growth in your sector, at some point you outgrow your sector and you have to take from somebody else or you get cut. And that's where a lot of them come. Now, this isn't the average recreational fisherman, in my opinion. It's small groups of folks, but...
I was just wondering how much the tourist industry has to do with it, that the state brings in a lot of money through tourism and the charter boat kind of thing. If the state tries to regulate the commercial fishermen out of business because the state gets more money from the other side of that.
It's important to note, though, and Glenn talked about it earlier, commercial fishermen produce food.
Right.
It's a very healthy source of protein. And over 90% of the people in our state do not fish at all. I'm one of those. I do not fish. I buy my fish, but I love fish and I love seafood, but I don't fish. So what does that mean? My source of a public trust resource, which I own along with everybody, I get from commercial fishing channels. So when you start restricting commercial fishing channels, you restrict access to over 90% of the people that want a source of healthy protein.
And it's
I'd like to get back to the lawsuit stuff here a little bit. In the 90s, we sued the federal government. We won on a particular case. We did get our attorney's fees paid under the Equal Access to Justice Act, but that was because a federal agency was involved.
Mm.
In this case, a federal agency isn't, they're not the bad guys. It was a group of fishermen that were.
Very good. Well, we're going to take another quick break and hear from our sponsors and supporters. And thank you for staying with us. This is the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association Wake Up Call Show.
Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
Hey folks, here's a tip. When you think firearms and ammo, think East 70 Palm. They've been on Highway 70 east of New Bern across from the fairgrounds for 31 years. Drew Preston and his staff know firearms. Gun sales have tripled in under a year, and women shooters are the fastest growing part of their business. Their great inventory, over 300 guns in stock, changes daily. And if you want something they don't have, they'll look for it. New and used, rifles, shotguns, and pistols, buy, sell, or trade. And they also have many holsters, scopes, and other gun accessories. Every member of the staff is deeply knowledgeable, and every one of them is an excellent shooter. So don't just come for the inventory. Come for the thoughtful advice. East 70 Palm, your home for firearms, ammo, and answers. Highway 70 East, New Bern, across from the fairgrounds.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out RightWingGranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to RightWingGranny.com.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Welcome back again. Thank you for staying with us. I'm going to go over to Glenn. You want to wrap this up a little bit?
Yeah, I just appreciate y'all having us here, and we'd like to let everybody out there know, you know, as we mentioned earlier, support the fishing industry, ask for local seafood. If you want more information, you can go to the North Carolina Fisheries Association website, ncfish.org. And like I say, join, be a member, be vocal, go to meetings, try to get yourself educated about the fisheries issues. I think it's something very important to the coast that most people have no idea about. So thank you.
And buy local.
And you can sign up for our weekly update.
Yeah,
it's sent out normally every Monday. Every Monday morning, just get on our website and sign up for it.
What is the website, full address of the website?
www.ncfish.org. Do I need to spell fish?
No, I think
very good.
We're going to change subjects right now. This is the 30th anniversary of the God and Country Christian Alliance banquet coming up in September, and Jerry is one of the past chairmen of the God and Country Christian Alliance, so I'm going to let him talk a little bit about the organization and the banquet.
Okay, we got to go back a few years, Mary. We got to go back to 1993. A group of concerned citizens were the WCTI. What network do they belong to? Anyway, that network was bragging about an upcoming new show called NYPD Blue. And they were bragging that they were going to have nudity and they were going to break down some barriers and all this other stuff. Well, I put a red flag in front of a bull, and a bunch of us got very concerned. And Walter Leake, who was pastor at the time of Praise Assembly, did some calls, including to me, and we met at the Burn Restaurant, which is where the Wendy's in New Bern is now. And we met, what are we going to do? So we did all kinds of letter writing, press releases, actually marched to WCTI. I forget where we started from, but it was a very, very hot summer day. I do remember that. Did we stop that, the airing of that? No, we did not. But it was, that was, you know, people today, young folks, if they would watch a program of NYPD Blue, they would, what's all the fuss? That's because we're calloused. We're used to it. And that's really what started network TV to go down that slippery slope. So once we failed to stop that, we thought that we need to be more proactive. Because we came at the tail end of NYPD Blue, that controversy. So we started we stayed at the Burn Restaurant, and we started a group. We were affiliated with a national Christian coalition. We called the local group the Craven Pamlico Christian Coalition, and we started that in 1994. And that September, or that fall, we had the first, what would become annual God and Country Banquet. And as you said, Mary, this September, September the 18th, that's on a Monday, that'll be our 30th annual God and Country Banquet. We had it at the Convention Center in New Bern for a number of years. Maxed it out one time, had 750 people. Our regular monthly meetings when we first started would get 50, 60, sometimes 75 people at the Burn Restaurant. Of course, the buffet helped, you know. Danny Strange was real very good about it. People had the option of going through, getting a buffet, and getting there a little early and eating, or they could just come for the meeting. And we continued doing the monthly meetings on a regular basis. Then it's been 6 years ago, we changed our focus a little bit because the National Christian Coalition changed their focus, so we became independent, and then we changed our name to the God and Country Christian Alliance because it was, you know, we had the banquet of the same name, and it just seemed to be good to do that. And Walter Leake, he passed away in 2012, Christmas Day, 2012. And I was chairman of the group for a while, and currently Michael Speciale is the chairman, and Ray Waldbusser from Newport is the vice chairman. And this year's banquet is going to be at the Havelock Tourist and Event Center on September the 18th. The guest speaker is going to be Dale Falwell. And the banquet, that's really our fundraiser. So, and Danny Strange, by the way, this will be the 30th year he's catered it. So,
wow.
And how he can do it at the price he does, I'm not sure, but I'm not going to argue with him. And that's our main fundraiser. And the funds, we don't make much money on the meals because the tickets are only $25. You can get a table of eight for $175. But we sell sponsorships. You get where you can buy ads in the banquet program. So we encourage folks to come. Dale Falwell, I'm sure, is going to give a great speech. We've had super speakers through the years, and it's just Justice Paul Newby, he emceed it for quite a few years. This year, his duties as Chief Justice don't allow him to do it, but I mean, he's said many times that this is the go-to event in North Carolina for anybody that's interested in politics.
So. And he was quite a historian.
Yes. Oh, he is. Yeah, he was not a keynote speaker, but he still gave some very good addresses as the master of ceremonies. So it was it's a very good event. But the God and Country Christian Alliance, that's not the only thing we do. We did go to Raleigh this past summer and talk to legislators when the abortion issue is before them. And I have to say that I was very proud of GCCA because our position on that issue was the right one. We spoke on that issue. Again, we didn't get what we wanted, but we were there.
And you do a chain of life?
We do the life chain. Now, when that first started, that started even before the Christian Coalition. That started in 1993, and it was sponsored by Praise Assembly, the church that was pastored by Walter Leake. Walter and Carol and my wife and I, Pam and I, were very involved with that at the start. And then eventually, the Christian Coalition took over the sponsorship, and now the God and Country Christian Alliance is the one that's responsible for getting the proper permits from the city and making sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, because the life chain is not a local event. It's always held on what's called Respect Life Sunday, which is the first Sunday in October. And the one year it was changed because we had a hurricane and people didn't feel too cool about standing out when a hurricane's coming over. But we changed. We still had the life chain. It was just held at a later time. And that's not for the faint of heart. We don't do anything except we stand there for an hour and pray. You know, we don't wave to people or we don't demonstrate. We just pray for the protection of the unborn.
And there, I know there's thought-provoking signs along with it. And you will get some real thumbs up from people and some other reactions from other people that drive by.
Yeah.
But I know it's really, really nice to see that number of people that stand in support of the unborn.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an issue that is going away.
No, it's not. Now, the God and Country Christian Alliance also has monthly meetings. We do not meet in September because that's the month of the banquet. And we do not meet in December because everybody's busy for Christmas. So other than that, we meet the third Monday of the month. The meeting starts at 7 o'clock p.m. at Moore's Barbecue on MLK Boulevard in New Bern. And if you want to eat, which who doesn't, we encourage folks to get there between 6 and 6:30 just to mix and chew the fat, whatever. And then the meeting starts at 7. I used to say it starts promptly at 7, but then Michael took over, and sometimes we're not so prompt. But anyway, we start around 7, and we try to end at 8:30, because us older folks need to get home before we change into pumpkins or something.
And you get great information there, and you get great camaraderie. Yes,
yes we do. That's a fun meeting. It really is.
And the group also supports pregnancy centers to try to help women with their decisions.
That's true. We support the one in New Bern is, well, it's two of them in New Bern. It's the one here and the one in Kinston, the one in Havelock, to the one in Moorhead City, and then their new one in Pamlico County.
I know that the group was partially responsible for getting a portable ultrasound machine that travels around to many of the pregnancy centers and has, by letting women see those ultrasounds, a lot of babies' lives have been saved.
Indeed they have, yeah. So it's an excellent group. It's an excellent ministry, really, and it's a fun group.
It's also a place, particularly during the election season, where many of the candidates will come and speak to the group. And it's a small enough group so that you get a chance to really hear what the candidate is saying and to ask questions that you might have and just watch in a small group how the candidate interacts with people. And I think you get a better feel for the person than you might have in a larger group.
Well,
I've appreciated that. We've been in North Carolina now for 10 years, but I still don't feel I know anything about local politics. And more than once, I've appreciated meeting a candidate and hearing him speak in a smaller group.
Indeed, yeah. Well, we're nonpartisan. We are not non-ideological. We are very ideologically driven on certain issues. That's not an apology. And as a result, we get some pretty good discussions, especially during an election. So, yeah, that's an important point to bring up.
This group is biblically sound. They're not politically correct. They're biblically sound.
Yeah, that's one thing that we have one gentleman in particular. It says, okay, that's a good position, but what's the biblical basis for it? Which is a good way to look at things.
You know, one thing that I will mention as we're closing, the banquet for the God and Country Christian Alliance is the 18th. There is a public meeting for the CCTA on the 19th, where we're going to have someone talk to us about cryptocurrency. And since I am totally ignorant on that subject, I am looking forward to that meeting. And it's somebody who is going to kind of give us the real story rather than the government picture. And it should be a very interesting meeting at Stanley Hall at 7 o'clock.
You know, folks, we're out of time now, but I really, really thank you for coming out in support of the commercial fishermen and the dilemma that they're in with, again, from my perspective, anybody that's coming down with a state regulation, it's not a state law, and it's a regulation that's coming out of thin air for no apparent reason. That's my opinion of it. Those regulations are not just. Folks, again, thank you for staying with us. This is the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association Wake Up Call Show. Thank you.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.